TBRI.
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 TOVD.
TBRI.
TBRI. Trust-based relational intervention.
TBRI is an attachment-based
trauma-informed intervention
that is designed to meet the complex needs
of vulnerable children.
TBRI uses empowering principles
to address physical needs,
connecting principles for attachment needs,
and correcting principles to disarm fear-based behaviors.
While TBRI is based on years of attachment, sensory processing, and neuroscience research,
the heartbeat of TBRI is connection.
Hello, and welcome back to the TBRI podcast. You're listening to Season 5, Episode 1. On this show, we talk all about trust-based relational intervention, or TBRI. We talk about different elements of the model itself, and also about how TBRI is applied in various systems of care and practice. I'm Emily Pickett, and with my host, Sarah Mercado, we are so excited to kick off our fifth season of the podcast, especially because we have someone very special we'd like for you to meet. Effective January 1 of 2023, Dr. Danica Knight stepped into the role of Reese Jones Director of the Karen Purvis Institute of Child Development at TCU. As director, Danica's primary responsibility is to ensure that Dr. Purvis's dream of bringing hope and healing to children around the world is realized through the Institute's mission of research, education, and outreach. In her role as professor, Dr. Knight mentors graduate students working toward their PhD in experimental psychology, leads the Institute's undergraduate research lab, and teaches courses in developmental psychology. She has authored numerous scientific articles on trauma-informed prevention interventions, improving substance abuse and mental health outcomes, and strategies for supporting successful implementation of new practices. Her most recent NIH-NIDA-funded grant, Leveraging Safe Adults, or LISA, examines the effectiveness of TBRI in preventing substance among justice-involved youth as they transition home after secure residential care. Dr. Knight also serves as project director for KPICD's Center for the Adaptation and Implementation of TBRI, or CATE, funded as part of the National Child Traumatic Stress Network. Friends, this is such a hopeful, fun, insightful conversation. If you followed the work of the Institute and TBRI for any amount of time, you will love hearing how Dr. Knight came to this work under the tutelage of Dr. David Cross. And if you're newer to the work, we can't think of a better introduction to the Institute and to Dr. Knight.
All right, Danica, welcome. Welcome. And I think I should say for our listeners, if they haven't listened to the previous Dr. Cross episode, they should go back because you are on the end of that chatting with him. And we are recording this actually immediately following the recording of that. And so you just listened to Dr. Cross very, very eloquently share with our entire audience all of the reasons that you are the right pick for our new director. So I know you're probably still a little dysregulated. That was a lot of words and maybe a little humbled. And I hope for you that just becomes a treasured recording, because what great words from him.
Oh my goodness, Sarah. It was so humbling and amazing to hear him say what he said about me. I was like, what? This is, who gets to hear your mentor from 35 years,
right,
you know, speak words of confidence in you? Is just, what a gift. You're absolutely right. I will treasure that conversation for my entire life.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm so glad that happened. And I think not just his confidence in you, but his truth about you. And, you know, as you're staring down, I don't want to say the gauntlet, because, you know, it's a long haul up ahead of, the task before you. What a nice way to start that and to look forward with so much confidence, not just from your predecessor, but from, you know, the founder, one of our founders, mm-hmm, at the Institute. Mm-hmm. And so would you share, I remember at a recent practitioner training, you shared with me a picture of you and Dr. Cross, and I don't want to say y'all were babies, but you were very young adults.
It was a long time ago.
How did y'all's journey start? Because you're not new to the Institute, but within a few years new as an employee. But how did y'all's journey start?
Yeah, so as everybody knows, Dr. David Cross is a professor of psychology here at TCU and has been for over 35 years. And so I was a brand new graduate student starting my master's and PhD journey. And when I came to TCU as a grad student, I hadn't heard of David Cross. He was brand new here, didn't have a program of research yet. And so I was just kind of hopping around from research program to research program, different professors, looking for my place, you know, where I belonged, what excited me. And one of my graduate, you know, fellow graduate students, I overheard her talking about this project. It was the Child Development Project. And they were in the process of recruiting 100 families to participate in a longitudinal study where they were doing the strange situation. What is the strange situation? And studying attachment. What on earth is attachment? It just piqued my curiosity. So her name was Julie Mason, and I just grilled her for hours. Tell me more. What is this about? What are you doing? Why, you know, how did this happen? They had just gotten a grant from the Hogg Foundation to do this study. And so she encouraged me to go and talk to Dr. Cross. Well, all I knew about him was that he was this really, really, really tall professor on the second floor. And I never went on that floor of Winton Scott Hall. So I got up the courage to go and talk to him. I was kind of quiet, shy, introverted at that time. Still kind of am, but so I went upstairs, and I remember as I was walking toward his office, a little blonde boy comes, you know, riding down the hallway on a little wooden riding toy. I don't know if it was a train or if it was a truck or what, but it was Dr. Cross's son, Nate, who was playing. Wow. Okay. That's how long ago this was.
Yeah.
Yes. And, you know, I see Dr. Cross coming out and kind of interacting and playing with them and just, you know, like dads do with their kids. And I thought, okay, this is a great man, just watching him interact with Nate. And I got up the confidence and the courage to say, hey, I've heard about this project. Could I get involved? And of course, he's a connector. He is always inviting people in and said, yeah, come on. And that was the end of it. I studied under him for my master's degree and did my doctoral dissertation under his guidance. And that's where our relationship began.
Goodness gracious. That's a long time ago.
Very long time ago. And I can't tell you, and I've told him this story, but I remember, you know, I would write whatever piece of like the introduction for my proposal or something. And I would go into his office and give it to him. This is before email. I'm really dating myself, but you know, so you would hand him the document and he would read it while I was sitting there.
Oh,
he did this
goodness.
For all of us. Yeah. While I was sitting there. And so I'm sitting in the chair and he's behind his desk and he's looking at this and reading my document. And you know how he does his facial expressions and his body language and, you know, rubbing his beard and, you know, the squint in his eyes and thinking and, you know, then he'd say something or ask a question and I would be shaking in my chair. I was physically shaking in my chair. And he had he still has this picture on his wall in his office. There's a picture of two children walking hand in hand. And I would just focus on the picture. Okay. Focus on the picture. You can get through this. You can do this. And his comments were always encouraging and supporting. That's how we met. And we, you know, that's how my learning from him began.
It's fun. It's funny that you said you're dating yourself because of the internet, because literally last night, Carrie Dady, another one of our trainers, and I were having dinner, and my daughter and one of her friends who are in college right now were with us. And I was talking about, like, there was no internet Like, there was no internet in college. Like, it's not that there wasn't Google, like there was no internet. And I remember we got our first like inter-campus email, and we were like, why do you need that? Like, what's the point? And now can you imagine?
Oh yeah.
So I'll date myself with you.
thank you.
Yeah, no problem. I'm here for you. what about Dr. Purvis? How much time did you get with her, and what was that interaction like?
Not enough.
Right.
You know, I did know Karen Purvis. You know, she entered the program. Everybody probably knows she finished her undergraduate degree later in life, and then went on for her PhD and didn't actually get her degree until she was 53 years old. And then went on to do amazing things.
Right.
So I met her when she was first entering the PhD program. So before she finished her master's, and, you know, early on, before the Hope Connections, all of that, she was a brand new student. And Dr. Cross and I were working on another project at the time. I was doing a research and evaluation project with a local residential treatment program for women who were addicted to substance use. And we were basically working on revising a parenting program to meet the needs of the women and the children. So Dr. Cross and I had been working on that, and he had a new student. He brought Karen over to the, I was here at TCU, have been here at TCU for my entire career. And at the Institute of Behavioral Research. So he walked her over to our offices, and I just remember she was quiet and just like in that learning mode, eager, but and so not like the Karen that we all know now, you know, just she was just in that early phase. And I remember saying, oh, you know, I went through the program like 7-8 years ago. If you need anything, I remember saying, kind of whispering to her, if you need to figure out how to work with Dr. Cross and get him to look at your stuff and get you feedback in a timely manner, you know, let me know. I'm here to support you. Yeah. Of course, she never needed my support. She figured it out all on her own and, you know, went on to do amazing work. But yeah, over the years, you know, Dr. Cross likes to do walk and talks around campus. And so, you know, I'd run into him and Karen walking across campus, and we'd stop and chat, or we'd, you know, meet for lunch or breakfast at the Paris coffee shop here in Fort Worth. So, and each time Karen would invite me, come to practitioner training, you know, come to this particular meeting. One time, I got to be a part of the meeting where T. Barry Brazelton came to TCU.
Gosh.
And just the conversations in the room. And the thing about Karen Purvis, we all know her heart for children and her brilliance to basically read the literature, understand in very deep ways, the way that, you know, her ability to translate the scientific literature into practice in the moment to really help address children's needs. That was just transformational. But she was also really bold. You know, she would have an idea and she would call somebody like T. Barry Brazelton, who's, you know, premier pediatrician, changed the way we think about parenting and child development in terms of socioemotional health for infants and children. And she would just pick up the phone and call him, or once email came about, email him. And so I was able to be a part of some of those conversations, usually as a fly on the wall, because I was always so inspired to watch her in action. You know, even that conversation happened later after she had been battling cancer. And even in the midst of her health challenges, just the spark, the brilliance, the assertiveness, the connections. I always, always admired her for that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's she was incredible. And I like you, wish there had been more time, but her, you know, I think we can all say like the mark is permanent that she left on all of our lives. And exactly the same for Dr. Cross. We just still have him here, and we can do just like he did to you and maybe cause a little embarrassment when we talk about how great he is. So, you know, I had the privilege, as did all of our team, we got to read your resume and your CV. And when I tell you it took about 30 minutes, I'm not kidding you. I was like, this is absolutely incredible. The amount of work that you've done, the richness of all of the research that you've done. I can't even begin to imagine what that has looked like and how that has really, you know, just impacted so many lives and so much work. Do you have a favorite project that you've worked on, or a couple of favorites? That's probably a hard question to answer, but I just think, you know, when we talked to Dr. Cross, he talked about your strength in research was one of the things that he really highlighted as something that's going to be a gift to our team. And so I'm just curious. I saw about, you know, well, I was going to exaggerate with a really large number, but a lot of research over many, many years that you've led. So any favorites?
Well, I've like I said, I've been at TCU. So I got my PhD here, and then I stuck around as a research scientist and served in that role for about 27 years before I moved into the faculty role that I hold now, affiliated here with psychology and the Karen Purvis Institute. So, favorite project. That's like asking a parent your favorite child.
Okay,
that's just not fair.
Now I'm nervous.
No. So I think one thing I will say is that, so I'm not a laboratory researcher. I am what we would consider to be an applied researcher. Okay. So for me, and a consistent theme throughout my entire career has been, I want to do research where I'm learning about the needs of whatever population that I'm working with and trying to figure out ways to meet those needs. And so the project I mentioned a little bit ago was with the Salvation Army First Choice Program here in Fort Worth, which at the time, early in my career, was a residential program where women could bring their children with them into treatment. And that was novel, and because usually you have to leave your child, you go in, and this is true today, most programs, if a woman with young children has a substance use problem and needs treatment, she has to leave her children with her family or with her partner or friends,
right?
Or they go into, you know, the foster care system. Uh-huh. But this program brought them together. And so the women were going through the program and their children were there in school. They had joint sessions, they had programs for the kids. And my role was to walk alongside the director and really provide kind of evaluation in real time, kind of that developmental evaluation model. But this was well before that, you know, approach was developed. And so for me, that's a central piece of all the research I've ever done. And that's what excites me. It's when I can actually have conversations with the women in that program, for example, sit down with them and really learn from them. And then we create, that's when we realized, you know, they really needed a parenting intervention that incorporated their addiction tendencies in addition to their parenting needs. And so we created an adapted version of a parenting program that didn't work. So we created a new one that, you know, if you compare that now with what TBRI is, it's only covering a sliver of, I think, what I now understand to be the best way to approach the needs of women and children, you know, in that population. But the point being, I love the projects where there's an impact. And like in that example, so I would work with the director and I would feed her something that we had learned about the women. Like, for example, we learned that women who had more than two children with them, they missed more sessions and they were not as engaged in the treatment program and they were more likely to drop out early. Huh. And so the director took that information and said, oh, well, then we need to limit the number of children to just two. And I was No. That's not what the data are telling us. What the data are telling us is that these women have additional stressors. There's additional things that they may need. So what is it that's keeping women with more children from engaging? Is it that their kids are sick more often? Because, you know, one kid gets sick and it goes through the whole family. So you have to be there to care for them. You can't go to your sessions, you know. So walking alongside people and helping use data to figure out how to address the needs mm-hmm. is what I love.
And I just have to tell you, Danica, I so appreciate that that's what you pulled out. One of my greatest frustrations, I think, and the work that I've done in the foster care system is that we've misunderstood addiction for so long, and we villainized people with addiction issues. And then within the foster care system, the first thing that we do when somebody's suffering from addiction is that we remove their kids from them. And we do that for safety, right? Like, I mean, we have to create safety. So I'm not throwing shade. I'm just saying, if there's anything in this world that would create more stress in my life than anything else, it would be the removal of my children from my home. And then we tell them to get clean and sober, right? So take away this coping, and it's a disease and all of the other things. So just to hear the body of research on that you've participated in is feels close to my heart in some ways, because I think we just, it roots in misunderstanding. It roots in the same thing that says, well, just take people with two kids, right? It's not, I don't think it's badly intentioned, but I think it's such a misunderstood place. And so I just resonate with all that you just said. When you think about the work of the Institute, even with that massive resume, right? Like, we're global. Dr. C and I were talking about that this actual day of recording is our last day of our Columbia practitioner training, our first international practitioner training, and just the global impacts of the work that we're doing. I think in the last probably 6 months alone, we could say that our team has been on the ground, I don't know, maybe 8 or 9 different countries, not even including the number of states we've been across. So we're really doing global work, and that's happening all simultaneously while there's a ton of work happening on the ground, just in the office. What does it look like when you're sitting where you are to navigate the transition into leadership? I'm just curious what that looks and feels like for you, and then what grounds you, and how will you step forward?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. There is a lot that is happening here at the Institute and around the globe. The work that we're involved with is just transformational. I think one of the things, I feel like I've been handed this precious gift. Mm-hmm. You know, the Institute and the work that we do, the vision of bringing hope and healing to children around the world is something that I am fully committed to. And so is everybody on our team, you know. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I've been handed this gift, this precious treasure, and asked to preserve it and to nurture it and to see it grow, you know, into whatever it can become. And so the people here are truly amazing. When I was in Memphis, Darren Jones asked me to do the closing for the practitioner training. Yeah. And as I stood up to speak, you and Darren and Casey and our training staff, several of the folks doing the logistics, we're still there and behind me, kind of standing up front with me. And I glanced over my shoulder and I thought, wow, you know, this is not me. This is us. Right. This is our team. We together, you know, Casey Call, Director of Education, Darren Jones, Director of Outreach. What a fabulous leadership team moving into our next decade. And each person here at the Institute was chosen for the role that they're in because of their heart, because of their compassion, because of their dedication to the mission and the vision of the work. And so who could ask for a better team, you know? Yeah. But my role, I think part of the brilliance of Karen Purvis and David Cross was the way that they built the Institute and created our team structure. So if you're familiar with us at the KPICD, you know that we have an education team We have an outreach team, we have a research team, and we have an administration team. And I think part of the brilliance is that that allows us to do deep work within each of those teams. And the teams work really closely and efficiently together to meet the needs, whether it's, you know, research and increasing the evidence base for TBRI, or outreach and training and consultation at the global level, or education, you know, meeting the needs of our undergraduate and graduate students here at TCU to help teach and train the next generation of people. That was a brilliant structure that we've inherited, and we will continue moving forward in that same way. But there are some opportunities and synergies that can happen when we work across teams. And so, for example, if you think about all of these undergraduate and graduate students who are coming to TCU, well, if we can connect them to people in our partner network for internships and study abroad, think about the hands-on experiences that they can gain while they're in school, and then be well prepared to really address the needs of children who've experienced trauma when they graduate from TCU. So that's an example of that synergy across teams.
Right. Yeah.
And another example is resource development. So, you know, we can be here in our ivory tower, you know, our research team can come up with all sorts of, you know, new interventions or adaptations, but it's not going to be implemented, it's not going to be used, and it's not going to be effective if it doesn't grow out of the needs of people in the field, the true needs of the children and the families. And we know what those needs are because of the work our outreach team is doing in their training and consultation. Right. And so we're in the process now of creating this kind of resource work group, not really sure what we're gonna call it yet, where we're gonna be reaching out to our partners across the globe to help us adapt our existing resources and create new ones to meet those needs that, you know, we're learning about. So I think those are two examples of some of the ways in which I see us moving in the future, where there's this synergy because of who we are.
I love a couple of things that you said. One of my favorite things that happens every so often is when I get an email from Casey and she says, you know, Sarah, I know you support organizations in this state. I have a student that's going home for the summer and is looking for an opportunity to plug in. And then I just, she'll include the student. And I just absolutely love thinking about taking this student who's so hungry for the knowledge. And, you know, for me, TBRI was like a complete transformation from a completely different way of life and working with kids and families. And these students don't have that, right? Like they just come in and they get this very rich understanding of how to do great work with kids and families. And then we can connect them to people already doing it. And it is so much fun. And then it's so fun to hear how all of that evolves and turns out, and how that student then gets connected even further around to the arms reaching out of that organization. And I really love how influential that can be. But the contrary to that is the student is teaching them too. So we work with professionals that are open to that kind of back and forth learning. And it's just really fun to see that happen.
So about a month ago, I had a student in my office. She's in my child psychology class. And we were just talking about her exam grade, and she wanted to know what she could do to improve it. And as we were talking, I knew that she was from South America, and she told me she was from Ecuador. Well, it just so happened that our training was going on in Ecuador at that very moment, and Darren had sent me pictures of the training. And so I showed her these pictures, and one of the pictures, you can see the participants who are sitting in the chairs in the auditorium, and on the big giant screen behind the panel was the face of the First Lady of Ecuador. And so the student in my office was like, "What? That's my First Lady."
Oh.
And she was participating as a panel member at, you know, as people had come together to learn about TBRI so that they could implement TBRI in various aspects of the child welfare system in Ecuador. And this student was like, how can I get connected? You know, that's my home country. I'm going to go back in the summer. How can I, the opportunities are endless.
Yeah.
To make these connections
that
can impact both the student and individuals, you know, in those various locations.
Yeah. Yeah. It really is unbelievable. And you just never know the timing of things, right? Like just how great it's going to be. And the other thing that you said was talking about bringing partners in to inform our work, because that's always been my favorite, is that TBRI was, you know, developed with Dr. Purvis sitting on the floor with kids, pretty much, you know, and students
right.
sitting on the floor with kids and Dr. Cross observing. And we have a whole episode about the evolution of that. But on my side, I was working in foster care and was invited to be a member of the steering committee of the Travis County Collaborative. And I was just enamored. Like I got an email from Dr. Purvis and I was like, oh my God, like, you know, it's just so exciting. But then the next thing that happened is that they were working on, some training specifically for foster care. And the next thing I know, I'm sitting around a table here at the Institute with, you know, people from 8 or 9 different organizations, and they're listening to our feedback about that probably won't work, that probably will work, maybe try it this way. And I think that is something that has never been lost on the Institute, is that,
right.
you know, the work that we do here is so vastly important, but we don't work out in the field day in and day out and know what's going to work. We're not sitting in front of clients. We're not, you know, and I just love that we're open to, and not just open,
well,
but it would be irresponsible not to include those voices in the work that we're doing.
It's part of our DNA. Everything
right.
we do is based on relationships
yep.
and yep. will continue to be based on relationships. And if we are to grow into our next decade, we have to keep learning. And the best way to do that is to invite people into relationship, into conversations. And that's kind of where our research component comes in. You know, not just having those conversations, but writing down the recommendations.
Right. Right.
And taking those recommendations and suggestions or barriers or whatever it is that we're hearing. We like to ask the questions, you know, what's going well, what's tricky,
right.
and what's needed.
Right.
Those three questions, you can get so much rich information from that can be used, you know, to better meet needs. So
right.
I think one of the cool things we have going on right now is our Leveraging Safe Adults Project. It's an NIH, National Institutes of Health grant, where we are doing just that. So it's for youth involved in the legal system. And we spent the first year listening and learning and taking that information from staff and families, youth, and created an adapted version of the caregiver package that we're hoping to release in 2023 to our practitioners. Mm-hmm. And so then we took that information and pilot tested it. And we're now rolling it out as part of a randomized control trial that we're going to hopefully, if all the outcomes come in the way we're hoping, will help us move the needle on the evidence-based practice ratings for TBRI. And in addition, we recognize that TBRI looks different in different contexts. And so a big part of the LISA project is having conversations with staff at each of the residential facilities that we're working with and learning about what's going well, what's tricky, and what's needed
yep.
Over the course of this project. And then feeding that back, hopefully, so that other juvenile probation departments or other juvenile facilities ultimately can replicate some of the good work that's happening as part of the project. So that's one of the exciting things. And that might be a fun topic for a podcast, you know, bring some of the members of the LISA team to
share
kind of what we're learning. That
for
might
sure.
be fun for the future. But the other cool thing is that we now have a SAMHSA grant. We're part of the NCTSN, the National Child Traumatic Stress Network. And that's going to help us look really deeply at some specific populations and do that learning cycle so that we can adapt some of our resources and create new resources to meet needs. So that the SAMHSA grant is truly a collaborative effort across our education, research, and outreach teams. Mm-hmm. So it'll be fun to see how that evolves over the next 5 years.
Oh, yeah. And I think for our listeners, I mean, if you gleaned anything, hold on to your hat, because we have a great opportunity to create some resources. And I know anytime we are able to create a new resource, they are scooped up and well utilized. And so I know, and in my perspective, I'm excited to be able to get some of those new things out there. And I and you and I have actually talked about this, the excitement and synergy that we get when we do bring all three of our teams together, because mm-hmm. there are so many brilliant minds. And if we don't cross-pollinate, then we miss opportunities. And I love that that's really one of your goals. And I'm looking forward to that. I don't want to take too much more of your time, but I do want to ask you, as you're sitting in this transition period, and we think about, you know, all that's going on, SAMHSA, LISA, the global work, the education that's happening. I mean, we're getting more and more students applying to our programs, and that's flourishing and growing. So we have been for a long time in a season of exponential growth across all things. But sitting in the leadership chair, hopes, dreams, fears of what's to come, or the future, or what you're stepping into?
Well, there are a lot of fears because, you know, this is a big responsibility, and I have enormous shoes to try and fill.
Yep.
I think, you know, who in their right mind would want to follow Karen Purvis and David Cross?
I have no idea, but apparently it's
not
you.
Me. Yeah. I never aspired to be the director of the Karen Purvis Institute, but I think I have been called. I am called into this role, and I take that very seriously. So it's a little daunting. It's a little scary. I'm not Karen Purvis. I'm not David Cross, but I do have some skills that I will bring and give it my best committed self. So I think I'm looking forward just to, I think of our institute kind of in our adolescence, you know. And when you're in your adolescence, there's strong roots and strong guideposts. We know our vision, our mission, well articulated. We've spent the year really deeply thinking about our strategic priorities for the coming, you know, decade or however long that will be. And so with an amazing team and an amazing network of partners, I'm extremely hopeful. I have complete confidence in our ability to continue to grow and thrive and learn. I will make mistakes. I'm going to make a lot of mistakes, as I shared with you in our one-on-one conversation last month.
Yeah, of course.
But I know that this work, it is sacred work to me. This is sacred work. And we are not alone.
Yep, I completely agree. And I don't know, Danica, I'm having a little moment. I don't. As you started talking, can you hear the church bells or the bells in the background?
The chapel.
And I'm just the chapel. I'm like having a little moment because I don't normally office here, and so I can hear them as you're talking about, like, this is, you know, an appointment for you and a calling for you, and then the bells, and I'm having a little bit of a moment. I do want to ask you one more question, and I really appreciate the answer that you just gave, and so I just want to flip it and what do you do for fun?
Oh, what do I do for fun? Okay, I have a brand new grandbaby. Her name is Lainey. So right now in my life, my fun is driving down the I-35 corridor between Fort Worth and San Antonio, Texas, so that I can hold that baby girl.
That's
my fun. I have a lot of other fun, but that's my biggest fun right now.
Well, that is a beautiful way to end this, and to watch the sort of the cycle repeat and come back around. And Danica, we are thrilled And we are honored and we are delighted that you're going to lead us in this next period of time. And thank you for taking the time to be with us today. I have no doubt that you'll be back with us on another episode at some point. We just look forward to what the future brings, and we're excited for all the guidance and the way that you're going to lead our team. So thanks for being on the podcast today, and thanks for all of the other things you're doing for kids and families.
Well, thank you, Sarah. Thank you for inviting me, and I've loved this conversation.
The TBRI podcast is produced by the Karen Purvis Institute of Child Development at TCU. To learn more about TBRI and the resources mentioned in this episode, please visit child.tcu.edu/podcast.